Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
It's time to turn your garden into a smart garden on News Radio 830 WCCO. Smart Gardens, an hour of expert advice and answers to all of your lawn and gardening questions. You can call 989-9226 or text us at 81807. Now, here's Denny Law with this week's Smart Garden.
Yes, indeed, we're back at it, welcoming your phone calls and text messages, your lawn and garden questions. Julie Weisenhorn's back with us. I haven't seen Julie
for a couple
of weeks or so. Nice to see you again. You've been busy doing the walk and the talk.
Walking the walk, exactly. Yeah, we've been planting some flowers for pollinators along some community gardens through Minneapolis Homegrown. And then also working with the Pillsbury United Communities, doing my pepper project over there. So
what's that about?
It's looking at the interplanting of pollinator attractive annual flowers with peppers to see if they actually become more productive.
Well, you folks from the U of M can talk like that.
The best part about the project is that the peppers that we grow go to the food shelf and also to the kitchen.
Oh, that's great.
For Pillsbury United Communities, one of the oldest nonprofits in Minnesota.
Really?
140 years old, started by one of the Pillsbury sons.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, we promised we really zero in on both lawn and garden talk today because you brought somebody special as a friend of ours.
Yeah, John Trappi's back with me.
Great to be back. Thanks again, Fred.
Yeah, welcome.
So glad you're here.
What would you give John his proper title? What can we call John?
He is a postdoc, I believe, in turf research and outreach now. He's become our turf guy here.
So let's call him the turf guy.
Yeah, he's the turf guy.
And if you have any kind of a lawn or garden question, now is your chance. We tend to get busy here. So if you have any question for Julie and John, 651-989-9226. There's a line open. Fill it or send a text like a lot of folks have already done, 81807. I asked you this, and I think other folks may be wondering this as well. We were talking off air about the boxwoods in my house. These are long-established boxwoods that look dead.
I know. And, you know, the best response we have for it was a hard winter on plants. There were a lot of we've heard from a lot of people that established plants, long-time shrubs in your yard have kind of kicked the bucket this year. They've been either browsed to death by animals or just the combination of, an early fall. John and I were talking about that. Early winter, and the really cold temperatures, and we didn't have any snow until February, pretty much. All of those combinations, really wreaked havoc on some of our landscape plants. The other thing to remember, too, is you mentioned your boxwoods were 15 years old.
Yeah.
There is a life cycle, lifetime to plants. So some plants just don't live longer than others. Some are short-lived, 20-year trees or so. Some are really long, like oaks and things, if they're healthy. But sometimes that's just the end of their lifeline.
You're right.
Well.
I never thought about that. That's...
So it's just time to replace them.
Plus, given the crazy weather.
It's really hard on them.
Well, again, as Julie said, John Trappi is with us today. If you have any kind of a turf question, this is an opportune time to call or text and ask John your question. Again, I'll tell you what. Let's do this. We've already got tons of phone calls and text messages. Let's go to the phones. Mary Ellen is calling from New Ulm, Minnesota. Mary Ellen, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I have two lilac bushes. And they're blooming very nice. They're not blooming. They're growing very nice and green, but they didn't bloom this year. And I'd like to trim them back like I do most years. I wondered when I can trim them or if I should.
Are these your common lilacs that bloom? Okay, so now is a good time to prune them. So our common lilacs around central Minnesota have finished blooming for the most part. and yours did not bloom. Part of it could be if you've trimmed them before, if you've trimmed them too late in the season. So because they're spring blooming plants, you need to prune them as soon as they're done blooming. And the reason for that is these plants in the next few weeks or so will set their flower buds for next year. And if you prune them too late, you prune off the flower buds for next year. The other option might be, the other situation might be that the plants are have become shaded over the years, and they're it's just too shady. These are full sun plants that really do well in full sun, and you're going to get the most flower in full sun. So if you need to prune them, now would be the time. And then hopefully next year, you know, look at the light, and then next year, hopefully you'll have some blossoms.
All right, thanks, Mary Ellen. John, I wanted to ask you about my lawn is looking pretty good, but is there are there certain things we should or should not be doing to our yard right now this time of year?
Basic lawn maintenance for right now should be should really just be making sure that if you had not fertilized in the spring and you typically need to fertilize because you say you have a sandier soil or lower organic matter. You could fertilize now from now until the end of June, and then after that I wouldn't fertilize anymore after that. But otherwise it's just basically you know, staying on top of the mowing and making sure you're mowing as needed.
And about as far as
I was going to ask, why not fertilize that after the end of June?
So typically speaking, if you fertilize when the plants are starting to go into summer stress, say in July, we get longer stretches between rainfall events. You're essentially telling the plant to grow, and in doing so, they're going to have to try to withstand that stress, and they're going to have more plant matter to try to do that. So we recommend just waiting until the fall to fertilize if you've missed already up and by the end of late June. If you haven't fertilized by then. Wait until the fall.
And these grasses are cool season grasses.
Correct.
They grow well in the spring and fall.
And mowing, we should keep it, what, 3-4 inches?
The taller the better.
Taller the better.
Yeah.
Keeps the weeds out.
Yeah, so if you increase your mowing height at a taller, you will have to, the plants will need less water. They'll be more resistant to weeds, generally speaking, insects and diseases as well. And the added benefit of mowing higher is that you have to mow more infrequently or less often. Because we recommend not mowing any more than 1/3 of the leaf surface at a time in a single mowing event. So by mowing taller, you can actually extend that window of how often you have to mow.
Very good. All right, let's go back to the phones. I think Sean is calling from Andover. Sean, you're on CCO. Good morning.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
So I have a couple 5-year-old fruit trees. One is a plum tree and one is a pear tree. And it seems they didn't fare too well in the winter time. I pruned them. I gave them a moderate pruning towards the end of February. And they did leaf, and they did have a couple blooms. But the leaves and blooms started turning black and then dying, and now I have bare trees. And I'm just wondering if that means they died in the spring, or are they just taking time off to recover?
It could have been, I'm sorry to hear that. I love both of those trees, but it could have been the combination of the weather that we had that killed those plants. Now, you don't tell me what kinds of pear and plum they are, but if they are really early blooming plants, they bloom earlier than some hardier varieties, then it could be, or they leaf out earlier, then it could be that they leafed out or bloomed early, really early. And, you know, we got hit with snow, I think it was in May, and really had some cold weather in April. So it probably killed the leaves and killed the blossoms, and that's why you didn't have very much of either of those. Now, if you want to look at the branches and just bend those branches and see if they snap, if it's actually truly dead, then you've lost those plants for this year. But if they're green and flexible, then I would say just kind of keep them watered well as needed, you know, based on rainfall, and then just keep an eye on them. They may re-leaf out. That's possible.
Okay. Texter says, my indoor lime tree is now outside but seems to be too much sun for it. It only gets morning sun. I thought they need more sun. It faces the same direction in the winter in the window and tries to grow limes inside, but all fall off too soon. What's wrong?
Well, it may be that it's in, let's see, I'm reading, that's a long text. It may be that that it's almost getting too much sun. Maybe it wasn't acclimated to the outdoors. I'm not sure when you put it outside, but it really should try to, you should try to acclimate it more outside. In other words, slowly increase the sunlight. Maybe put it into a part shade area right now to just kind of, you know, it's kind of hot out here. It's really a big change. So, and then slowly move it into more sun. Why the limes fall off inside is because the plant, the environment is just not conducive. It's either not getting enough water or the plant just can't hang on to the fruit. That's a lot of energy. And so you may try fertilizing it more. It may need to be repotted. It might need some pruning. And so it might need a general overhaul on the care there. So,
okay. You know what? We didn't need to take a quick break. So those folks on the line, stay there. We're going to get your questions answered. Texters as well. So don't go away. And welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here on CCO. In the studio, for just joining us, Julie Weisenhorn and John Trappi from the University of Minnesota Extension. And callers and texters, we could be here for days, I think, answering those. But we appreciate that. There is one line open if you want to use it.
Yeah. What if nobody ever called? It would be terrible.
You and I would have, and John would have a long conversation.
We'd be having coffee, which we are anyway. So
let's go to Rockford, Iowa. I think Sandra is there here on CCO. Sandra, good morning.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
You bet.
I enjoy your show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I have some beautiful boxwoods, and I think they might have gotten winter freeze. They are, you know, a tannish color on the top.
Yep.
And I took each individual and snipped down as far as I could go.
Okay.
But there's still quite a bit of tan going down the center. They're getting nice new growths underneath. I can see the green coming up around the bottom. Should I level them off or?
I think it depends on how they look. So if there's still some dieback in the center, and you know, normally we would say cut down to about a quarter inch within that green, the nice green tissue on the stem, to get rid of that winter dieback. But if you can't see it, I think you can just make a judgment call on that. But normally we would say cut it down all the way into that area, because it's not going to rebud on that dead area.
Let's go to Cameron, Wisconsin. I think Terry has a lawn question for John. Go ahead, Terry.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Sure. Thank you.
Kill it with soap and water, but I wonder if...
Hey, Terry? Terry,
oversee it after that.
I don't know, Terry, if you're on a cell because your first part of your question was cut off. Why don't you pose your question, please?
Okay. I've got a lot of... moss in my lawn, and I can kill it with soap and water, but then can I overseed it after that?
Yeah, you can certainly do that, but you're starting to near the window of being too late to seed your lawn, because you're going to be fighting a lot of other summer annual grassy weeds as well. But something else to consider there is why the moss exists. It's typically a moist and shady condition, and if you don't treat that problem, you're probably just going to get moss again. So consider how much shade you have and whether or not you want to have less, depending on how much you want to control this moss.
All right. Thanks, Terry. Let's hear from Gary. Then we're going to grab some text messages. Gary, you're on CCO. Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
I'm growing tomatoes this
Excellent.
Year, and I've got them in two pots, approximately a foot and a half in diameter, and they're well drained.
Okay.
And they're pretty much full sun. Last year I had a good crop, but by mid-August, all of the leaves started to turn brown and just kind of fall off. And I'm wondering, is that a result of overwatering, or how much water should tomato plants get if they're in full sun?
So, Terry, have you put in new soil this year?
It is new soil in each of the two pots.
Okay. So one of the issues with tomatoes is some of them are susceptible to a number of different leaf diseases. And in some cases, by the time you see it, in fact, in all cases, by the time you see it, there's nothing you can do about it. And what you describe is sounds like one of the blights that tomatoes get. We have an excellent resource on our website called What's Wrong With My Plant. And if you go to that, it's at extension.umn.edu and go to Yard and Garden. You can also just Google What's Wrong With My Plant. And if you go to that, you can actually go to the vegetable section, go to tomatoes, and then look for a description of what your plant looks like or what you saw last year. And it will give you a bunch of different resources for how, you know, tell you what it is, what you can do about it. One of the number one things that our plant pathologists will recommend is that you choose a plant that's resistant to the early or late blight and the septoria leaf spot. Those are the big three that we see on tomatoes. So choosing a disease-resistant plant. And then water at the base of the plant. Don't water over. Don't do overhead watering. The leaves don't need any water. They need to be watered just at the base of the plant. You might be doing that already in a container. The other thing, too, is rotating your crops. And in containers, you have the advantage of being able to put in new soil every year. And somebody had that same question up here on the text messages. So any plant that's in the nightshade family, tomatoes, potatoes, peppers, eggplants, tomatillos, they all need to have new soil in containers every year, or they need to be rotated in your garden bed. And we have information about rotation on our soil section of our website, too. So the last thing, too, is you want to always wash your with a 10% bleach solution before you fill them with soil if you've had nightshade plants in them before. So you've got disease-resistant plants. You want to water at the base of the plant. You also want to use clean soil for those nightshade plants every year, and then rotate them in your garden, and then also wash your containers. And wash your tools, too. That's always helpful. Your cages, your stakes, all of that stuff.
That's a good point. And you're right. We did have a text asking that same question.
Yeah, so I think we killed two birds with one stone.
Yes, we did. All right. Hang on, Julie and John. We're going to take a quick break. We have another half hour of the show to go, so don't go away. Call in your lawn or garden question or send a text here on CCO. Good Saturday morning to you. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show. If you're just joining us in studio, Julie Weisenhorn, along with John Trappe from the University of Minnesota. Truly, if you have any kind of a lawn or garden question, this is your day today.
Let's hear it.
All right. Call in or send Julie or John a text as well. There is a text that came in earlier that, can you put a systemic on hostas for slugs?
So I would back up, actually, and think about why you need a systemic for slugs. So slugs go into plants, and particularly hostas. They like shady, cool areas. They chew holes in hostas. To ingest that systemic, every slug needs to chew a hole in your hosta. So right now, so you're not going to prevent them from feeding on there. You're going to basically get holes in your hostas, and then the slug will die. Okay, well, that's great that they die. But the better thing to do is to alter the environment and maybe not have to use a systemic. For example, I found it to be helpful in my own garden to actually remove some of the lower leaves of the hosta so that it's up above the ground. They're not lying flat on the ground, making it really easy for slugs to crawl up on them. So I kind of go in there and I prune the base around there to open up the base of the hosta to increase light. And then also bring those leaves up off the soil so that they're not creating this lovely, wonderful environment for slugs. Other ideas, too, I know people put down mulch around those hostas. It's hard on the body of the slug to crawl across coarse wood mulch. But most of the time you want to look at the environment and find out and try to figure out, okay, why am I getting such a bad, you know, such bad slugs? Maybe you're overwatering. You know, a shady area that's really moist and damp, boy, that's a perfect slug environment. Maybe you don't need to water as much in that area. So look at the area before you reach for that chemical. See what
people
you can do
still
to change
use
it.
Beer.
Yeah, and actually, former faculty member Jeff Gilman wrote a book about. He tried out a lot of these garden myths, and beer was one of them. He found that you need the cheapest beer, which was good. He was using expensive beer at first, and he said, "Well, I could think of better uses for that." So. But he wrote a book about that, and you can just look at that. Just Google him on Amazon or on the website. But he found that there's an actual way to put those pie pans into or some kind of cup or whatever. He's got a dimension and stuff. He's 1 inch deep and whatever. And you have to put the beer right at the very surface, right at the very level, so that actually a little bit below.
You kinda,
so that
kinda
the,
bury it
so
a
the
little
slugs
bit, right?
go yeah so the right slugs in. Crawl over, but they have to reach into the pan to reach the beer, and then they fall in. So you can do that. You can put boards down and attract them underneath that. That's an old time a way to do that too, but I prefer to actually prune my hostas.
That's a good idea. Got to try that. All right, 651-989-9226 is the phone number. Text number is 81807. You know, now that you and John are both here, let's mention that website again, because it's just
sure.
There's lawn information there, right?
It's a great lawn section for homeowners. Our website is extension.umn.edu, and you can click on Yard and Garden up on the tab under Learn. We also have our excellent Yard and Garden blog, and also the Turf blog too, which provide really timely information. You can subscribe to both of those and receive alerts when those when new posts are done on those blogs. And I don't know, John, anything else about the Turf blog?
Nope, just turf.umn.edu.
All right, very good. And again, if you have a lawn or garden question, today's your day. Call it in or text it in. Let's go back to the phones. Alice is calling from beautiful Lindstrom. Hi, Alice. Good morning.
Denny and Julie, it is beautiful this morning. My question or comment is about Japanese beetles.
Oh, yes.
Them, and I have sprinkled 7 on the grass, lightly I've sprinkled it, in front of my very small garden and on the tomato plants. And it seemed to take care of the Japanese beetle. Now I'm wondering if this is safe for us. To eat the tomatoes. I did it last year, and I'm still here. And it did seem to work. So is this something I could continue to do, or was it just a fluke?
You want to address the lawn?
So I can address the lawn portion, not necessarily the tomato portion. So the anytime you're trying to apply something to restrict grubs in the lawn, typically, that's not going to have any impact on whether or not the adult beetles, where they're at and how many there are. Typically, because their range is so wide that they could be coming from your neighbor's lawn or somebody from a mile away. So trying to control grubs is in the lawn is really only because they're so severe that they're actually causing damage to the lawn as larvae, as the white grubs. Try not to think in terms of them as trying to prevent the adults from forming or, you know, from coming around rose bushes or tomatoes or anything like that.
As far as the 7 goes on fruits and vegetables, I'm just looking on the label right here, and it says it's for use on fruit and vegetable gardens. But what I would really recommend, Alice, is, and for everybody listening, is you've got to really read these labels. You know, nobody likes to read anymore. They all want to just do it.
Isn't that true?
And so you really, from a safety standpoint, human health, environment, your pets, wildlife, water, you've really got to pay attention to that label. And it has to do with, there's lots of things you can do in lieu of spraying chemicals, but also the timing, the amount, and what kinds of plants that you can actually use this for. You really need to read that information. And also what to wear to protect yourself.
Good point.
So there's lots of things you can do that you don't have to spray with. We mentioned a lot of these on the show. We did earlier a little bit.
Absolutely.
With the tomatoes.
Texter says, this year my peonies are leggy. I did fertilize about 3 weeks ago. The plants look tall and with thinner stalks. Plenty of flower buds. Why are they so leggy?
I guess I would look around to see if the light has changed, if they're in some shade, a little bit more shade this year. Maybe a tree nearby has grown up. It might be time to move them. Not right now, but this year might be a good opportunity to move them. And you can look at information on that on our website on how to move peonies and what time to do that.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Karen, I believe, is calling from Cambridge. Karen, you're on CCO. Good morning.
Yes, my brother, or son rather, tells me do not use weed and feed on my lawn. Doesn't matter whether it's granular or liquid. And this, because he said it's going to harm the trees and the shrubbery. And the second question, last week, I think it was, I mentioned don't use garden soil for potting. I think that's it.
Okay, we'll get some answers here.
Yeah, I'll quickly answer the garden soil, and then John can address the other one. Garden soil in potting soil is better to use in containers because it drains better than garden soil. Garden soil oftentimes is heavier, and so we just recommend putting in fresh garden soil to increase the drainage so that you have a lot better growth in that case. It also includes some fertilizer most of the time.
You're talking about potting soil.
Potting soil, yeah, potting soil.
Okay.
So to address the weed and feed question on the lawn, typically the reason why we're hesitant on recommending the use of a weed and feed product is because you're essentially applying a broadcast application to the whole lawn to try to restrict weeds. And those products are not that effective at controlling weeds, for one. And number two, we recommend spot spraying when possible, whenever possible, to try to limit the amount of pesticides that we're putting out into the environment. And as far as safety goes, as far as trees and shrubs, once again, just make sure that you read the label and directions on how to apply that product. Weed and feed products also have a herbicide label as well, and have directions on their use. And trees and shrubs that you can avoid applying that weed and feed product around to limit their effect on non-target plants.
Okay. Texter wants to know, can I start trimming back bushes that are done flowering and cut off all the dead wood?
Yes, you can, depending on what those bushes are. And I think I'm going to guess that if they finish flowering, then they're maybe an early spring spirea or lilac. And, yeah, it's excellent time to clean out that dead wood. That will really increase the light to some of the newer growth.
All right. Back to the phones we go. Dan is calling in from Minneapolis. Dan, good morning. You're on CCO.
Yes, I had a question on, I have a real shaded lawn, you know, a lot of trees and stuff. What could I do for that as far as my lawn is really rough shape?
Well, two things. First of all, you want to make sure that you have a shade-resistant species. Typically, the fescues, specifically the fine fescues and the tall fescues, are more shade-tolerant than other cool-season species like Kentucky bluegrass. So recommend planting the right plant for the place for your shady environment. The other thing, too, is it just depends on how much shade you have. So if your lawn is not receiving more than a couple of hours of direct sunlight, there's a good chance that it may not be enough sunlight for those turf grasses to be growing in that area. And you may want to look at some alternative ground cover there.
651-989-9226. Text is 81807. There's a text that spilled the car oil on the ground. What do I do to get grass to grow in that area?
Well, oil persists in the environment. Any type of petroleum product is going to persist in the environment for a long time. So if you, depending on the size of the area, you may need to actually remove the soil from that location if you want to have grass to grow there again. And when you move that off-site, just make sure that you don't add that to any type of compost or anything like that. So.
Okay. Tell you what, let's do this. We need to take a quick break. So don't go away. We have texters, we have callers, more coming up here on our Smart Garden Show here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Hey, good morning. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show. We're around every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour, welcoming your lawn and garden questions. In studio, if you just join us, Julie Weisenhorn is in with John Trappi from the U of M. And we will mention that website before you guys take off today, okay? In the meantime,
<Sounds good. laughs>
let's go back to the phones. We have so many questions to answer here. Marilyn is calling from Woodbury. Marilyn, you're on CCO.
Good morning.
Morning.
My daughter has a lot of rhubarb, and a friend would like some. Can it be transplanted? And if so, how and when?
So rhubarb is best transplanted in the early spring when it's just starting to come up. When you first see the kind of the start of the leaves, the bulge at the base there of the plant, that's the easiest time. Right now, it is the prime time to be picking it, as you know. So what I would recommend is that they harvest it, use it, eat it. It's delicious. And then next spring, just make a plan to divide it, and that's the best time to move it. Now, rhubarb is also a big feeder, so they're gonna want to fertilize that after they've transplanted it, too, as it starts to emerge and grow and produce some leaves.
Text, by the way, 81807. Here's one probably for John. I am doing more. Am I doing more harm than good by fertilizing my lawn monthly? It looks very green.
I imagine it would look very green if you're fertilizing monthly. I would, you know, if you're doing more harm than good, I think it depends on where you're doing the harm too. So I'd recommend backing off your fertilizer applications. And of course, it does depend on how much you're fertilizing monthly, the rate at which you're fertilizing. But I would just consider applying fertilizer as far as like from a high end or high maintenance lawn. Typically, it's once or twice in the spring, and then once or twice in the fall is what you should be focusing on as far as timing goes. Really, the fall is the most important time for fertilizer because that's when the lawn is can actually store some of that energy and prepare it for the next spring and actually be able to fill in those areas and have a nice, healthy lawn.
All right. I sprayed, I'm not sure how to pronounce this, but it's a 2,4-D for dandelions on an area that had a lot of them. How soon can I spray again, or is it better to wait till fall?
Okay, I believe there's also another text message question there for dandelions, so I'll be able to address both of them. So as far as the 2,4-D, I don't know specifically which herbicide label you're referring to. So as far as re-entry or being able to reapply to try to control these dandelions, I would just consult the label because they'll have very specific instructions on there as far as when you can apply again after one application. For controlling those. But related to dandelions, they're typically a weed species that's fairly easy to control and fairly easy to prevent if you have a dense, healthy turf. The best defense against a weed, any weed, but especially dandelions, is a dense, healthy turf. And the way that you do that is by making sure that you have proper cultural practices and just make sure that next year, this coming fall, that you you ensure those proper cultural practices and make sure that your lawn is dense and healthy. And then next year, you're going to prevent some of those weeds from filling in any type of voids.
Oh, Julie, maybe you can help me with this, but it seems like in some circumstances, some situations, people want dandelions for the bees.
They do want dandelions for the bees at times. And sometimes it can be a little testy between neighbors when one neighbor believes they should have dandelions and leave them. It's the choice that people make in their lawns. And the one thing to remember about dandelions is that dandelions are perennial plants. Dandelions put out a lot of seed. So if you can go out there and mow before the plant goes to seed, that would be very nice for the rest of your neighbors.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Why? It seems like, and again, with years of mowing lawns behind me, it seems like if I have a dandelion in my yard, I'll dig it out. I won't spray
it. Right, you can do that too.
But it seems like every time there's a dandelion, it's like initially hidden behind a rock.
Oh, yeah.
Have you
it's
ever
really
seen
hard,
that?
Hard to dig out.
What's the deal with
yeah,
that?
Big
yeah.
Tap root. That's when you notice them.
Yeah, right. They have a big tap root.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. Carrie is calling from Ham Lake. Carrie? There she is. Carrie, you're on CCO.
Hi. How long in the summer can you eat rhubarb?
Usually we recommend picking it up until around the 4th of July, so midsummer. And after that, to stop picking it because then it'll still produce more leaves, but then it will produce those leaves, photosynthesize, and put energy into next year's crop.
Okay. And can you cut the seeds off when it goes to seed?
You can cut the flowers off, yeah. So that's bolting. It's called bolting. And it happens when we get these immense, you know, these really warm temperatures causes the plant to flower. And you can just cut that off, cut that stalk off.
All right. Very good. Let's go back to the text messages. Here's one for you. Will my rhododendron bloom?
Hard to say.
I guess it would be.
A rhododendron, and I don't know if I'm guessing they're talking about a broadleaf rhododendron, such as a PJM, which is a popular purple rhododendron that keeps its leaves through the winter. And in some cases, the plant is not in enough sun, or maybe it needs some fertilizer to kind of prompt some bud set. Those plants have finished blooming now for the spring for the most part. Some of them are kind of still blooming a little bit, but they're going to start to set their flower buds for next year. And you want to give those plants maybe a shot of fertilizer at this point. Not a lot of nitrogen. You want to look more for the phosphorus and the potassium. And then hopefully have, you know, a better bud set for next year.
Okay, let's see. Why is it so hard to find the old-fashioned pink honeysuckle bush I'd like to fill in among my old bushes?
Well, one of the problems with old-fashioned pink honeysuckle is there are four varieties of it that it's an exotic. It's not a native honeysuckle, which we do have native honeysuckles here. And the exotic honeysuckles are four of them that are specially regulated as noxious weeds on the Minnesota Department of Agriculture noxious weed list. So they are not sold. And so it's going to be hard to find those. You may want to decide to start adding in other plants into those areas, that other shrubs that might be good blooming, spring blooming shrubs, and start to diversify that hedge.
You know, we kind of started off the show talking about boxwoods, and there was a text that came in a bit ago asking, do boxwood shrubs suffer if they're buried under heavy snow all winter? We have 8 boxwood shrubs. All with winter burn, but the ones that had more snow cover are doing worse.
Well, one of the things to remember is that winter burn probably happened before we got the big dump of snow. Remember back to January, we had a warm first half of January, and then the bottom dropped out of the temperature, and we had a really incredibly cold half of January after that. And then we got dumped on with snow. So that burn might have happened before the snow came. The one problem with heavy snow on any woody plant is going to be breakage of branches. So you want to be careful about just assuming you can dump snow on those to protect them, but you're going to be weighting those branches down, and eventually you could break those branches.
I know we're almost out of time, Julie and John, but my garden texter says raspberries look quite healthy, have set a lot of blossoms. Should I be fertilizing, and with what type?
So I'm going to recommend you go back to our Extension website. And that is extension.umn.edu. Go to Yard and Garden and go down to the fruit section, because we have a couple of really great publications about raspberries, and that's going to give you the information that you need regarding fertilizing.
All right. I know we have less than 60 seconds to go. Let's bring in that whole website, that wonderful thing that you guys put so much work in.
So that's extension.umn.edu. And you can go up to the Learn tab, click on Yard and Garden, and remember to subscribe and read our Yard and Garden blog, because that has current information that we see happening right now. We publish it every couple of weeks. It's accessible anytime.
John, what should we be doing to our lawns now before we ask you guys to, here's your hat.
Just make sure you stay on top of your mowing and just kind of pay attention to any type of weather or anything like that. Just look for pests right now that should be actively growing. Yes.
All right. Good to see you. Thank you both, Julie.
Thanks,
John.
A lot.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for all your help. I appreciate that.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.